And welcome back to the Insane Asylum, episode 48, the Night of the Living Dreads podcast. I am Otis B. Dreads. Of course, we have happy boy SJ over there. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back in the Insane Asylum. This is an exciting episode today.
I think so as well. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time, so I'm going to give out some horror love real quick, and we'll dive right in to our guest this week. Okay, horror love goes as follows. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook there, open and closed group. Check them out. Misfit Horror Fiend Club, another one of my favorites. The Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on, Wayne.
Slaughter on, Garth.
I don't know why that tickles me so much. And of course, one of my favorites to say in the little shout out, Zombie Boob. Everybody likes a good zombie boob. And of course, our non-horror shout out, Cannabis Arcade, cannabis spelled with a K. Check them out. That's where you get a lot of your adult humor, as well as Zombie Boob. You get some of that over there. And of course, Night Living Dreads, we are over there on Facebook as well, and nightlivingdreads.com. No A in Dreads. So, boy, I blew right through that, SJ, because I'm kind of excited to get our guest talking. This is going to be fun. So without further ado, we have producer, actor, Peter Anthony, also known as used to be known, I guess, as the Mad Cuban. Peter, welcome to the Insane Asylum, sir.
Excellent. It's an honor to be in the asylum. I was always told never to visit an asylum because they wouldn't let me go, so I feel like I'm in one now.
Oh, awesome, awesome. I'm glad you feel at home, my friend. let's just start it right out, because, like I said, I want to give you the floor. For those who may not be familiar with you, your work, all of that. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about who Peter Anthony is, and get into how'd you get into horror? Is this a lifelong thing? How did you get into wanting to be, from one side of the camera to the other? Let's start there. Let's give a rundown. Who's Peter Anthony?
So you want the full life rundown from when I was little to how I got into this kind of deal?
Well, sure. I mean, we can start with when was your first love of horror? When did that start?
So when I was young, I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 43. So back in the day, there was nothing really on. The only thing you had was HBO for like R-rated movies. So I remember being in my basement like 6 years old, just watching Friday the 13th by myself, which back then, like I always said, it wasn't sexy like it is now to like horror. Something was wrong with you back then, they used to think, because our generation of parents never liked horror. Very few did. People that are in their 70s, they didn't grow up with horror. They weren't huge horror fans. So I remember being 6, 7 years old in my basement with a Jason mask on, just watching the Friday the 13th. And everybody thought I was sick, and I used to root for Jason. So I knew it was a little different then. Just always been, then let's fast forward, always been a horror fan, always dressed up as Jason for Friday the 13th. Had my knee replaced when I was only 35 years old, and I was sitting around recovering, and I seen a horror convention in Massachusetts, and I live in Connecticut. I saw Kane Hodder, and I was like, oh man, I'm a huge Kane Hodder fan. I never met the guy. Long story short, I'm like, I'm going. So I drove there by myself, met him, pulls me out of line. I don't know if you guys know, in-depth relationship I have with him, he's become like a great friend where we talk all the time. When I go to see him, I sit at his table, we go out to eat, we go out to drink. So me and him became great friends, which is like a dream come true for someone.
Yeah,
like
that's
me.
That's amazing to be like close friends with Kane Hodder.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys checked the site, but I got pictures of me doing shots with him and eating with him. I used to go to the line, and I'd be in the line. I don't even deserve it, if you ask me. I'm sitting in line, like 10 people in. He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm fucking in line. He's like, get out of line. And he sit next to me. I'm like, oh my God. <That's> I can't believe it. Yeah. So now I'm in his table, and we become boys, and asked him to be in Vengeance, but he couldn't because he only does SAG films, and it's a non-SAG film, and you break the union, so I kind of get it, But
Yes.
He's been mad. I mean, he signs everything for free. I held a video game Friday the 13th tournament. I was one of the first to hold the video game tournament. He did a shout out on the video for me. Just amazing, the guy. Like everything he does, I ask him to do, he does for me for nothing. It's just insane. I always try to pay him. He doesn't let me pay him. So anyways, because of that, I was like hooked, and I would go to every convention all the time. Then, you know, you're familiar with the fan film Voorhees that's trying to come out?
Yes. Yeah. I've seen it in passing. Yeah.
So I got told by one of my friends that they needed backers. So I was like, oh, I'll try to back the film. So I backed it. Long story short, got Kane involved, where he like kind of promoted the film, end up having parting ways with them. And then basically when I was marketing for them, Vengeance, who at that point was Mythos, was always kind of upset. I guess this is Jason Brooks's words, that Voorhees was being marketed better to the fans than they were. So he basically contacted me and said, who's the marketing guy over there? I said, it's me. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. He said, why don't you come on to Mythos? So we came on to Mythos. So Mythos ran a backer where they got $1,000 in 30 days. So me and Jason and everybody kind of sat down, retooled it. I'm like, I gave my input. This is who you got to approach. We need 5,000 fans. We need this and that. 61 days later, we broke the Kickstarter record for fan film. I think we had $44,000.
Wow.
That's incredible.
So then they said, hey, you want to be in it? And I said, yeah. And then we were trying to get Kane for that part to fight Jason. So I just thought I was going to be on the chain gang. And then Kane couldn't do it. Then we tried to get Steve Dash, but he was so sick, he ended up just doing the role as the cop. We actually flew to his home in Florida. So he was really, really sick. We didn't know. So he's like, I can't be outside doing that. So they're like, you want to be the main chain guy? I'm like, fuck yeah. So now that happened. Then from there.
Hey, hold this.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Man, I wish they showed me holding my dick when I did that.
That would have been that would have been the icing on the cake. Yeah. But that's probably too much work. Huh?
You guys get the lines down. I love it. Yeah. So then now we had a fight scene. I was in maybe over an hour, and me and Jason had a huge fight scene that we filmed all day, but they didn't put it in. So they're telling me the footage doesn't line up great. So now Jason Brooks has it with another gentleman, and for the director's cut, they might get it in there, but they might not, because I'm kind of going to break news on your show right now. We might do a part two, and I might be in it alive.
Awesome. And you heard it right here. That's awesome.
No one's ever heard that. Jason might kick my ass, or try to kick my ass at least. He hears me say that, but we've been talking about it going back and forth. And we were like, well, what if you don't die? What if you just scream, but you live? And then we just sort of rolling from there. So me and him have an idea. We got to sell it to Jeremy, that I live, in part two. If we don't do the director's cut with me doing the fight footage, then we're going to put me in two if we can get that going.
That's great, because that little standoff there in Vengeance, I was kind of waiting for a little rumble to happen.
Yeah, and we rumble. I mean, I throw combos, he grabs my head. There's a big thing. There's prosthetics involved. It was a big deal. But I guess it didn't line up right. So I don't know. Like I said, I told them, I said, listen, if it looks stupid or makes Jason look stupid, then let's not do it. You know, so they're going to mess with the footage now. But if we can sell part two, to Jeremy, who's kind of burnt out from it, I understand, then that's the route we're going to go, where I'm alive. And then we got to get, you're going to hear here there too, we got Tom Matthews, because everyone's looking for him after one. We had him signed in one. Without going too deep, somebody else pulled him away from us, told him don't be in our movie. So we kind of had to back off on that, but I think we could probably get him for part two.
Awesome.
So Slashing Cat guys, Riley and Nick, who I was a fan of, I used to watch all their YouTube videos on the Friday the 13th game. I guess they said they were fans of how I marketed and did stuff. They asked me if I could help out there. I said, yeah. And then they said, you want the main role? From James Deere. Rob Deere and James Deere are brothers. So I was like, fuck yeah. So they flew me out. I think I shot for 9 days. But then, I don't know if you guys are familiar, I got hurt on set. Did you hear?
I did not. No, I'm not familiar with that.
So I was on set doing a scene versus a guy named Jonathan Ivey. He's an MMA legend. He has like 150 fights. I tore my – so your rotator cuff, I guess, has four tendons. I never learned until I got hurt. I snapped three of them off, and I snapped my bicep off, dislocated my shoulder, tore my trap. Finished the fight scenes, went back to the hotel, went back at midnight, did a couple scenes – again with the shoulder. My shoulder wasn't even working, so I had to like basically wing it around and swing it to make it look good in shots. flew home, went to the surgeon. He's like, emergency surgery. So I had all four tendons reattached. I was in, if you look at the Premier, I have a big brace on my arm. So I was in that brace for 9 weeks. I just got out of it 4 weeks ago.
Oh, so wow.
I fly back Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, to Chicago, then drive to Rockford, Illinois, finish my two scenes now that I'm not hurt. Well, I'm still hurt, but I'm better now, and finish that movie. So that's what they're waiting for. And then they did that Kickstarter. I don't know if you saw it, for the ambulance scene for Fall Camp Blood. You guys familiar with that?
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. Not.
So they wrote in the script, okay, you know, they're going to show what happens. Because, you know, at the end of four, he's pretty fucking dead. You know? He did a faceplant, right. Jason, on a machete. So they're like, well, how is he going to live? Well, then the script, an ambulance scene of how he lives. But the problem is, to get a 1988 ambulance, to rent it for a day is like 10 grand with insurance. So how else would you do it? So they did another Indiegogo, which ends tomorrow. And we raised the money. We got a deal on it. So we raised the money. So now that scene's going to be shot. Huge.
Yeah, and that's just awesome that, you know, there is so much backing and fan support to take and you know, put their hard-earned money into, you know, your venture and making these films, you know, come to life. It's absolutely awesome. Before we get into Fall of Camp Blood, because I do want to talk a lot about that trailer that I've watched probably 30 times today. I mean, just it is absolutely awesome. I'm really hyped to see this. This is something that me and SJ talked a little bit about earlier, and that's when do you think was the last real, true slasher film that came out? It seems like that part of this, you know, genre, I guess being a subgenre of horror, it almost seems like, I don't know, is it weakening out? Is it dying out? Is the fan films, is that rejuvenating the slasher, you know, genre of horror? What's your thoughts on that?
Such a great question. I think, you know, as you get older, we're all kind of like in love with the original ones. And even when something good comes along, I'm the same way. I'm like, well, it wasn't like it was originally.
Right.
But as far as, I'll answer that in two parts. As far as Friday 13th, I think the last scary one was 4. Now, 4 is my favorite. 6 is my second favorite. Some people have 6 number one. Between 4 and 6, most people are their favorite. Some people like 10 their favorite, but whatever. I think 4, and they're like, well, it's not scary now. Yeah, it's not scary because we're adults and we've seen it 500 times. But when I remember 4 being young, that scared the shit out of me. And then 6 was scary too, but 6 added a little bit of comedy in there, which made it not as scary. So to me, the last true slasher for Friday 13th was part 4. Overall, I mean, if you look at it, people like to knock it. Some people love it. I thought Scream was a great, I kind of reinvented the whole slasher genre, if you ask me. So that's really like the last one.
Oh, the late.
That's true. Yeah, talking with SJ earlier, we were like really running our head trying to think of when the last good, real true slasher was. And I'd probably have to, you know, agree with you, Peter, being Scream. I mean, would you agree, SJ?
I would. I think the whole Scream thing, it kind of went off the rails there towards the end. But the original, you know, did definitely kind of redefine the genre. And of course, the late great Wes Craven is responsible for that. But as you know, in terms of the last great slasher film, it's a really hard thing to pin down, because horror has gone into so many different directions. Like, we have what have become classics, like Eli Roth with Cabin Fever, for example. Yeah. It's not exactly a slasher, but it's gory. It's got the blood, boobs, and, you know, body horror kind of thing going on. But in terms of the last great slasher film, I don't know. Like you said, Otis, we're kind of scratching our heads to figure out what, if any, movie is the last great one to come out. Yeah,
because when you think slasher, you think of one badass guy, right? You think of one.
Yeah,
Jason, one Freddy. Right. So when it breaks those rules, you almost don't put it in the slot. I mean, Saw 1 was genius. You know?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. When he got up off the floor at the end, I almost shit myself.
Yeah, that was great. And then slamming the door almost like in the same way of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, slamming that steel door closed at the end, and that musical sting.
It was
gets into your soul. Yeah,
and then the way the creative kills. Same thing with oh my god, my brain's gone. What's the one where death follows them everywhere? They had like seven of them.
Final Destination. Is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought you were talking about It Follows.
Oh no! I meant Death Follows Them. So yeah, Final Destination 1-2, that was real genius too. But it's not really a slasher, you know.
Yeah.
But it has
those tropes.
Yeah, I would say Scream was, because Scream was great because Scream didn't try to do a Freddy or Jason. It kept it in reality, where they almost made fun of, you know, the films to a degree, right, but in a positive way. And you're thinking, well, anybody could do that. Two guys could get a voice box and run around stabbing people. So, I don't put it in that category just because I grew up with that. But a lot of people like Riley and Nick, some of their favorite movies are Scream. So the younger generation loves Scream.
Now, sticking kind of with this whole slasher theme, SJ also brought up, you know, that he thinks kind of these fan films like, Vengeance, there were some shorts done on Krueger. There was, of course, the Myers and Jason little battle. I mean, not a full-length fan film, but... What do you think? I mean, I think kind of I agree with SJ that I believe that a lot of these fan films could really be the future of new slasher films. Do you kind of feel that way, being as involved in these fan films as you are?
100%. I didn't think at first it could. And we're also very, very lucky because of the lawsuit. I mean, I think if the franchise is cranking out Friday 13th 2 by now, these fan films aren't going to have the backing from the fans like they would, because they'd be going to the cons to see that Jason, those new movies, and they wouldn't be diving in their pockets for $10, $20, $500 to support our project. So I think we're very, very lucky at the time we are to be able to get that done. Cause I think once that lawsuit's over and you're cranking out Friday 13th, I don't think you'll see as many of the Friday 13th fan films. You'll see a bigger push by studios to kind of shun them, where right now they don't even really care.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And now, are you just going to concentrate more on fan films, or are you going to get a little different with Peter Anthony Productions, PA Productions? Or are you going to broaden this here are two parts. Are you going to broaden it and get out of not do so much of a franchise fan film? Versus maybe just doing its own separate entity within the horror genre, or are you going to stick strictly with the horror genre?
I'm going to do original content, I believe is what you're trying to say, away from Friday 13th, but it will be horror.
Yeah.
So I haven't even started to write it yet. I talked to a couple people about it. I talked to some writers. I ran some ideas. Well, months ago, my stepson had a birthday, dressed up as a clown makeup. And I got these crazy response from everybody direct saying, why don't you do a clown kind of film? And not like Joker, but different. So I ran it down, and I basically it's what I want to do. So I got a couple projects that I'm still part of, but I want to do original content and write it myself and have two different directors, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And Flash is basically about a guy who's trying to like make it in the clown industry. There's a guy who's a legend who's done it. It's like a different realm, a different universe than what we live in now, per se, meaning just a different time, and where clowns kind of rule and people look at clowns as heroes. And this main clown guy is on the West Coast, and he's like supposed to be the king and the best, but he's actually a bad person. And here I am on the East Coast, and I can't make it, but I'm a good person. And I kind of go down this dark alley trying to win the whole, there's like a championship every year at the end. And long story short, we all come together, and me and him are on stage together. But a lot of crazy, sick, demented stuff happens to me to be able to get to that point, and then me and him kind of have a showdown on stage. So that's what I'm working on. Now I'm in the process of writing it.
That's awesome. That's going to freak a lot of people.
Yeah.
Out. Go ahead. And...
yeah, that's what I'm hoping, because I think I can play that demented clown guy pretty easy. I got to shave the beard, but because I hate growing this big beard, but I had to grow it back for my part for Fall of Camp Blood. helps.
Well, we'll get into Fall of Camp Blood here in a second, but would you say that that's your magnus opus? This is your idea, your big horror idea, the clown film, or do you have something else that's kind of been booting in the back of your mind, like a horror film that you wish you could make that you just haven't done yet?
No, because it was Friday 13th, and now, you know, I worked with CJ Graham, I worked with Steve Dash, I worked with Harry Manfrandini, Tom McLaughlin. We went to the premiere, everybody was there, you know, I'm in the, there's a Hall of Fame for Friday 13th in the museum. I'm there now, I'm producing, and I'm a main actor. I faced Jason again in Fall Camp Blood, which I know, sorry, we'll get into, but so that, you know, Friends with Cain, so that I've kind of filled that need for me. So, and I, you know, I'm not a Freddy guy, I'm not a Mike guy, so that's not something I want to do. But now, original content, now that I have connections, I have directors, I have writers, is nothing better than coming up with your own idea. Now, you can fail, and that would be a big pill to swallow. But I'm one of those risky people where hopefully I can get it out there. I think I'm good at expressing what I'm trying to do. So if I can express to the horror fans, this is what I'm trying to do, this is why it's different, hopefully I can get the backing there. And it won't be a fan film, it'll just be original content film. And hopefully they'll like it. So I'm going to shoot the trailers and get ideas. So it's pretty cool that basically the guy, just to get a little bit more, he sits there and he watches like The Crow, and he watches like a Jack Nicholson and all these clowns. He doesn't know who his identity is, and he tries to incorporate them, and he keeps failing and failing until finally he comes up with the version that works for him. So, and he goes deeper into drugs and darkness because he keeps losing to this guy. And I'm pretty cool.
No, that sounds awesome.
It sounds like something I'd watch.
Yeah, good. That's what I'm saying, because I'm a horror fan, so I think I kind of know what everyone wants to see, you know?
So let's enough hesitation with Fall of Camp Blood. Let's get into that. Maybe if you can give us a brief, overview of, does this pick up from a certain time period? Is it kind of its own little, entity? Is it by chance a Vengeance Part 2? I mean, is there any correlation between the two? Just give us a rundown on this, because I'm kind of excited to see this.
I'm glad you're excited. No correlations. The Vengeance 2.0 we can talk about later. It's basically 1 year exactly after the end of Part 4. So basically they're gonna take down the camp because they're tired of everybody dying and Jason killing people at the camp. They're tired of the negative publicity. So the town's gonna destroy the camp, the Fall of Camp Blood. So there's people that own cabins there, families, and they send their kids to go get like the last of their belongings. And as they go there, they realize Jason's not gone. So it picks up exactly after the end of Part 4, where he's on the ground.
Wow. That's a very interesting and intelligent way to take the franchise, I got to say.
Yeah, it's pretty risky, which I love risky, as you can see with Vengeance. Because why do this? You're never going to be better doing it the same, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so to go after, because everyone, it's weird. Some of the fans are like, well, he's dead after 4. I'm like, well, he's dead after everyone.
Yeah, he's dead after every single movie.
Yeah, what the hell?
You're just trying to come up with a new way to kill the guy.
Yeah, so, and everybody, they're a big fan of 4 like I am, Slashing Cast, which is Riley and Nick. So we got with a, they did a similar movie with a low budget, and then they kind of grabbed me to try to help out in this last Kickstarter, which we did, and they wanted, I think they wanted 10 or 15 grand. We ended up getting 30-something, 34, 35. So, and now we changed the hood. There's a guy named Marcio from Horror Costumes. He's so talented. He's done the hood for Never Hike Alone. He's done the hood for Sin Vengeance. His talent is ridiculous. So we got the hood from him. We got the mask from another company. We upgraded the suit. So now we got new cameras. We have the ambulance scene. So... we got a great fight scene between me and that gentleman, Jonathan Ivey. Jonathan Ivey, if you look him up when you guys get off, put in Jonathan Ivey. He's crazy. He's fought like Ken Shamrock. He's fought all these guys. Real awesome guy. So they became friends with him because he was a friend of Slashing Cast, and they brought him in the film. And they're like, oh, you got to fight Jonathan Ivey in this scene. I'm like, Jesus Christ, okay. In the first take, the second take of the scene, I snapped my shoulder off. I turned to Riley and I go, my shoulder's off, dude. It doesn't work. And he must think I'm kidding. because I'm just standing there looking at him. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, dude, I don't, it's gone. Like, it's barely hanging on. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. So he's like, oh, okay. I'm like, he's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, fuck it, we're going for it. So I don't know how many takes we did. And it's a violent fight scene. And kudos to John Ivey, because now, A, he sold it so good. And B, he's allowing me to throw a punch an inch from his face when my arm's not even working. So he was a trooper. That fight scene, I think, besides the ambulance scene, is going to be one of the best scenes. I think, being, I guess, cocky, it's going to be the best fight scene in a fan for Friday the 13th that we've ever seen.
Oh, that's dope. Oh,
wow.
That's dope as fuck. Do you come from an MMA background at all? I mean, it sounds like you kind of experience with the hand-to-hand fighting.
Yeah. So trained MMA for a bunch of years with my buddy, who basically fought some UFC guys later on in his career. But I've had so many surgeries. I've had 39 surgeries. I've had 23 knee surgeries. I've had my knee replaced. So my body just wouldn't do it, you know?
Right.
Sprinkle in about 50, 60 street fights. Some heavy lifting and you know, my body is destroyed. So not what it used to be. But yeah. So I'm a big fan of that. So I was so happy to fight him. And he's so humble. He allows, you know, me to even hit him in the scene. And some of those guys, they have egos. They don't even like that on film. So he came in and he played the part. He's like, oh, I get, you're the star and it is what it is. And he was like the nicest guy you've ever met in your life. Most tough guys are, because they don't have to prove they're tough, you know?
Right. Yeah. They've already proven that in the cage or wherever.
Exactly. And then you have the guys that are like 5'4", 120 pounds, and they're constantly acting like they're tough. And you're like, just go away before you get hurt.
All right. No pain.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, the old little man syndrome.
Yeah. So when we did the back to the beard, Riley was like, we want you to be in your 40s, you know, I forgot how it worked out, but they thought I was younger than I was. And I'm like, no, I'm 43. So basically I'm like, well, if I, because I admit I dyed my beard. So if I don't dye my beard and let it grow out, I'll look in my 40s. I'm pretty sure. So that's kind of what I did. I grew the beard out, got some whites in it, and it fits more like the character's age. So that's what I kind of got to do again, what I've been doing. So that's why the beard's all puffy. My niece hates it.
That's the craft, though. You have to stick to it.
Yeah, and I have to like look at the pictures and be like, well, how long was it? How many whites were in it? You know, like, it's hard to try to match it exactly the same.
Well, that kind of brings me to my next question for you. Being involved with independent horror movies like this, what can you describe the prosthetic and the what we love as old horror movie fans, the makeup effects? How does that go? How do you budget that out? What's the budget for the special effects, and who do you have doing the gore effects for you? Because in Vengeance, there were a lot of great kills. I'd go ahead and say it. A lot of great kills, especially, I think my favorite one was the drunk guy. I don't remember his name, but yeah, it was the Lewis. Mortal Kombat scene is what I like to think of it as, like the sign ripping out scene. that was fucking great.
That was by a pro. We're lucky. So one of the producers, Don Schell, he's friends with Joe Castro. Joe Castro is a legend in practical effects in Hollywood. He's like right under Savini for one of being some of the best. And Don called in on a favor for we gave away, you can be Jason in our film for $10,000. So in that film, Jason, that guy who plays Louis, that's our real Jason. That's Jason Brooks in Vengeance. Okay. So in that scene, we put Don Schell in Jason's gear, put Don on top of a box, because Jason Brooks is 6'5". And if you look at that scene, Jason's about a foot taller.
He's towering over the guy, yeah.
Yeah, and Don's like, I don't know, 5'9 or something. So they put him on a box, and that's that scene is, that's Don Schell. So if I can send you behind-the-scene pictures, they flew out Jason to Joe Cash shop, and they did his whole head and they did the spine and everything. It looks exactly like him. But that kill would normally cost, I don't know, 15 to 20 grand by itself.
Because you have to do a live cast of the person. Like if it was, you know, and I'm sure you did that on this production, actual live cast. To, you know,
and then the blood and then the outfit, the squirting guns, and you can only do it once. So you can't mess up.
Right.
So it was a lot of pressure, but that's, I see it in the Fall Camp Blood. We don't have that kind of are that favor called in for those kind of kills. I mean, I know they have some makeup guys. They do, and at least some good kills. That kill, though, by itself, if we're talking about that one, is just a different level. That's amazing.
Yeah, that was an amazing kill. I think that was maybe my favorite kill. I have three favorite kills from Vengeance. The first one is the first one when, you know, Jason goes and grabs the tent, and basically he's recreating that scene. I don't remember which Friday sequel it was where he picks up the sleeping bags and just bangs them against the trees, and, you know, that kill. But it's kind of a callback to that. He picks up the entire tent and just smashes these two kids having sex right there on the lake at the, you know, start of the movie. I loved that. That was one. So many good kills. The other one was the the car window decapitation scene. I loved that. That's one of my favorites too.
My favorites are the Louis one. I love the Bugsy where he chops his head off in one slice and just is like
top
of
the
brains hanging out.
Yeah.
You guys are familiar with who Bugsy is, right?
Bugsy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Bugsy from the video game.
Oh, the Friday
so in, video game. The real guy who paid $10,000 to be in the video game, that's him. So if you look at our movie, he has the bat like he does in the video game. That's what he hits Jason with.
No way. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I love that kill. There's so many good kills. I thought funny-wise, the kill where he puts the machete through his ass out the front of him, and then the girl puts the hot dog on the stick in the next scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. the water bottle through the guy's throat. There was a couple good ones in there.
What's the body count on this one, on Vengeance, since we're speaking on it?
I don't know. See, that's what people are like. You kind of had too many people, too many kills. But, yeah, but we gave away spots as backers. So that whole chain gang is 13 of us. Everybody paid to be in those scenes.
Oh, and that's you, by the way. Yeah, that's exactly. You. At the last guy to killed on the chain gang.
Well, remember, not killed yet. I don't know.
Oh, that's true.
I did a count. It's on YouTube. It's like 51, like that.
It's got to be up there.
Oh,
just in Vengeance, you said 51?
It's either 51 or 41. Some guy did a whole... Wow. The prisoners alone is 13 with two cops. That's 15. Right there. You know? The whole both camps, add them together. Then the whole crew, except for the last person... Yeah, Elias, you could say, dies. There's a lot of kills in there.
Does Elias really die, though?
No, he's alive. He's alive at the end. Yeah. But then again, if you look at the end when the guy has the certificates of death, he's died before.
Yeah, three times at least.
Yeah, so you're basically thinking that he's using the book to come alive each time.
And what the fuck is that book? Is that going to be explained? Or is it just the Necronomicon? What is it?
Yeah, I mean, they don't like to explain it. We were always never to explain it. But, I mean, if you look at part 9, that book's in there, the name you just said. And it just fits that why Jason keeps coming back. And how else would you explain Elias? I mean, you know how old he would be like by then? So that's
right,
that's
right.
That really worked, you know?
Well, Go ahead.
I was kind of going to change, you know, not really direction, because I'm curious when we were talking about the effects and the practical effects. And, you know, one thing I did like about, you know, Vengeance and all the kills is you didn't see any, unless I missed it, you didn't see any CG, you know, effects there. Are you more practical effect guy versus, you know, CG?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you couldn't state it anymore. I mean, you look at like the movie The Thing, right? You guys are fans of The Thing.
Oh my god, I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
If you're doing that in the 80s, how the fuck today couldn't you be 50 times better? You know what I'm saying? Like that movie was revolutionary. And then you had The Thing too, which was the prequel, and they did all CGI. And don't get me wrong, the movie was better than most people said it was, but the CGI killed it for me. I wish they would.
Well, they also left a lot of the practical effects on the cutting room floor with
That's
the remake of The Thing. Yeah,
that's what I heard.
There's a lot of practical stuff, you know, practical effects that just didn't make it into the final cut. Because I don't know. I really don't know why.
You know what I'm thinking too? It's almost like certain jobs in the U.S. where the craft is lost. I mean, all these people now in the last 15, 20 years, they don't go to practical ed school. They go to CGI school.
Oh, no. Yeah.
So I mean, at one point where you have Savini and all these guys thriving on it, they're like the last of that genre where some people, yeah, there's small practical effects, but 90% of the talent is going to CGI. So it's almost like fading out where I don't think they could be as good as they were almost in the 80s anymore because nobody does it like that.
That's true.
I agree.
Yeah. I think we're all in agreement there.
But yeah, okay. I'm a practical effect guy. I don't care if it even looks semi-fake. It just looks real. Like, you feel like you're still in that environment in the movie. Where the CGI, as soon as it kicks in, I don't care how good it is, unless it's Jurassic Park, you're like, oh, here we go, CGI, especially in horror, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, are you more of a producer guy or an acting guy? Which came first? Did you want to get into actually being a part on one side of the camera, you know, being a part of the making of a horror film, or did you want to act in one first and then just kind of, you know, move towards the whole, producing?
I always wanted to act ever since I was young. Ones like you should act. But I don't know. The whole scene is not really me. And what am I going to do? Move to LA and take a risk like that? I wasn't going to do it. Big family guy, would never really move away from my family. So I don't know. I kind of knew that if I kicked ass in one segment, another door would open. So when they came to me with the marketing for Vengeance, I saw it as a big break. And then I said, well, if I can kick ass at that, then maybe they could give me some acting. And then they gave me the acting. And I said, okay, well, I don't really have any, amazing Oscar winning lines in Vengeance. but I said, well, if I can play that badass really good, maybe something else will open. I always feel like if you work hard enough, something will open. And then fall camp will open. And I'm like one of the major guys in that. And then the production company, I always feel like if I busted my ass hard enough, it would open. So, yeah, I always wanted to act first, but I was humble in trying to earn it, with the respect of everybody to get to that point.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's stepping stones. I mean, you conquer or you do one thing, and in that particular business, another door may open up and you seize that opportunity. Yeah, that's great. I don't know. I don't think that we mentioned it, maybe off air before the show, but Fall of Camp Blood, that is scheduled to come out next year. You want to throw a projected date? Is it set in stone?
From what we know right now, it's going to be March 13th, which is a Friday the 13th in 2020. That's the release date we're shooting for.
How appropriate.
That's great.
How appropriate.
Yeah. So we're because I just got to do my two scenes, and they're going to do that ambulance scene in December, and that's it. We'd be wrapped up if I didn't get hurt. So,
well, so yes, everybody's got that to look forward to. Now, where can people take and actually get some info as it moves closer to March? Is there a website? Is there, where can they get the info they need for Fall Camp Blood or, to check out Vengeance, which I think a lot of our listeners probably have already seen it. But for those that haven't, where can they get all that stuff at?
So Fall Camp Blood, there's an Instagram, Fall of Camp Blood, The Fall of Camp Blood. Same with Facebook. It's The Fall of Camp Blood. In Vengeance, is, once again, it's Friday the 13th Vengeance. That'll be on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, I believe. No, I don't run that one. That's the two ways to get it. Let me ask you guys a question. Did you watch Vengeance 2.0?
Well, it's funny because at first, a mutual friend, I think, or Van, who had contacted you. He actually runs Misfit Horror Fiend Club.
Yeah.
And was talking to you, kind of set this whole interview up, which I greatly appreciate. I didn't realize or just went right to the original. Today, on the other hand, I did watch the 2.0. And what's different? Why don't you tell everybody what's different and why they should probably check that one out versus, I know you got some different sound guys or whatnot coming.
Yeah, I thought 2.0 was 10 times better than the original. The original was kind of, it's a long story, it's an excuse, but we had to do the movie premiere in Blairstown, New Jersey. That's how we lined it up. That's where the original Friday 13th was shot. And we had CJ Grimm there, and we had Tom McLaughlin, and we had everybody there, and we invited all the other fan films there. So we invited Never Hike Alone. We invited Voorhees. We invited his name was Jason is another one. We invited everybody from the other fan films to enjoy our day. And we showed our movie there twice at the movie theater, but we had to rush it. So long story short, we were supposed to have a post-production guy who paid. Post-production is expensive. It was supposed to be $15,000 or $20,000 for post-production for the movie. He never paid it. So Now you have, instead of a team, 20, 30, 40, 50 guys, who that's all they do all day. You have Jeremy, the director, and Dustin, the photography, trying to do it all together on massive files. We shot on Arri Alexa cameras. Arri Alexa is what 60% of the Oscar awards were shot on.
Oh yeah. Those are expensive cameras. Like anything Arri. It's,
we had that on the underwater scene with Jason, the canister, the clear plastic that encapsulizes the camera, is $1,500 a day to rent.
Oh yeah, just the camera cage.
The cage for it to be underwater. Plus, you're scared shitless bringing it underwater.
Right, but, right. Because if anything leaks, that's on you.
Nobody even wanted to do it. So those cameras are $75,000. So
yeah, oh, Jesus Christ.
So it's $1,500 just to rent that thing for 2 days that we did the underwater scenes with the him waking up and then him drowning the girl later.
And that was a great shot though with the girl drowning.
Thanks. Like, that's hard to do at night. The bubbles, no light. Yeah.
Coming up out. Oh, that was great. Yeah. Did you have to shoot day for night ever in this?
No. But that shot there is actually a pool.
Okay.
So one of the producers, that's his, just like part six, in any of the close up scenes in part six, that's Tom McLaughlin's parents' pool. Only the wide shots is a real lake, but all the water stunts and everything, it's hard to get divers in a black, area in a swamp, and it's hard to see them. So that they dumped like pig guts and all kinds of stuff in Tom's parents' pool, and there's pictures of it, and they shot those scenes when he's fighting Tommy, like on the boat with the fire. That's all in the pool.
Oh wow,
yeah, he told us too. So if you look at the end, if you look at part six with Tom McLaughlin, he originally wrote Elias to be at the end of part six, and Elias comes back in the storyboards of it, and he meets the gravekeeper. So basically, we called in for vengeance, Tom McLaughlin, and asked him how he wanted to shoot it, what his story of Elias was. And he helped direct us. So we said, okay, we're going to make you the great for then. So that's Tom McLaughlin, the director of Six in the beginning with Elias.
That's amazing. Damn.
Yeah.
And also, just bringing Jason's dad into the whole mix was something that hadn't been explored, I don't think, too much in the canon films, so to speak.
Never. They talk about it once. It's in the comic books. It's in two different comic books. And like I said, it was in the storyboards for six, but the producers didn't like it.
Right.
Which I don't know why. It seemed cool. But
seemed like a sequel bait.
And if you look at our film, another ballsy move by Jeremy, in part one, where it looked like Pamela killed those counselors upstairs, we retell it that Elias.
Oh yes, yes, yes. And now it's Elias that killed those yellow shirted teens in the very first film.
Yeah.
That was a great scene. They created it almost perfectly.
Some people hate it because they don't like the story being changed, but you never saw Pamela do it. All you saw was somebody's hand.
Right.
But everybody mostly says, what a great job of recreating it. We even went out and got the exact guitar, not the guitar in the movie, but the same model and make as the guitar with the girl strumming it. So I thought we did a good job.
You almost had me, like, the way it was shot, it was almost like a 70s or, late 70s shot. It was a little blurry, less high def than you would expect from if you were recreating that shot today with a modern, like, airy camera, like you're saying, it would look a different.
But yeah,
you nailed it. You guys,
thank you. Well, some of the scenes too. So lenses are a big deal, and I'm not a master camera guy. So the lens you use on a camera is like a big deal. So Tom McLaughlin said he used this special grainy look in six with this lens. So we had to go for that lens, $10,000 for the lens.
Oh God, yes. I know how expensive those things can be. I used to work in the. I worked at a place that would rent out film cameras and lenses. So yeah, like Zeiss lenses and shit like that.
Yeah, it's all a big deal. So that's the exact lens because they wanted to get the exact look of six. So they use that lens everywhere in the film, which people, to some people, they'll notice, you know, the film school people, but most people won't. But I mean, the fact that we did it, and we know we did it, is a great achievement.
Right. I agree. It looks so great. The whole film is really great. You got drone shots, some kind of epic sweeping shots of the forest. And it's just such a really great fan service, fan horror film. Vengeance. It's awesome. It really is. I almost teared up watching it. It's like, look at the passion that goes into the making of this flick.
Yeah. A lot of fighting too, which nobody sees, trust me.
Oh yeah.
A lot of long nights, a lot of egos, I mean, mine included. No, this is how you should do it. Fuck you, rah, rah, rah. Don't talk for 2 days.
Right.
Because everybody cares, you know, so it's a good
Right. It's passion. There's passion in true art.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. What you mentioned, you know, fan service, SJ, and you brought up a few things, like Cunningham Road. There were a few things that, like, you know, of course, Sean Cunningham. Were these put in there on purpose?
100%. Officer Brooker for
for
Brooker the third Jason. Yeah, all that. If you look at the mailbox when Elias goes to kill the grandmother Ginny,
81, 86.
Yes, the date exactly. Yeah, the date of part six.
And a lot of these I missed. And then SJ myself, he was watching it and throwing, he's like, man, look at this. This is in there. Like, how could I have fucking missed all of
how
this?
How about the new, how about favorite?
Right. My favorite thing was, we don't need anything that happened in Springwood to happen again over here.
Yeah,
that was the one Freddy reference.
Yeah, you got that. How about did you guys know the newscasting team? Did you see what the channel was called?
Oh, Kima.
Yes.
K-I-M-A. Yeah. Kima.
Yeah.
Kima.
Yeah.
That there's was one of the first things I noticed.
There's even more. Corey Kaufman made all posters and did a lot of the props and stuff. I didn't even know. A lot of the license plates are throwbacks to stuff, too. Including, we did the throwback on one of the license plates for one of the cop cars. One of the Jeeps were in the game, it says Nobisco. The original camp is called Camp Nobiscobo. That's where I went there last year and did the whole tour for the whole day and stayed. That license plate is also somewhere in the movie on one of the cars or trucks, too. There's a lot of little things. If you look at Robert when he's in the coffee shop, look at his coffee cup, look at the books he's looking at. It's the same three books that Tommy had in his truck, The Cult of Whatever, when he's going to revive Jason.
Oh, no way.
Wow.
Yeah, there's like
I miss all that. See, I thought I was being clever picking up on all this stuff, but there's even more shit. I need to go back. And I was telling Otis earlier, this is the type of Vengeance, at least, is the type of movie you have to go back and watch at least twice to pick up on everything.
I agree.
At least twice.
I'm on like four or five at this point. Still missing shit.
And the movie you were talking about. With the bags is part seven. That's when Kane Hodder swings the girl into the tree and kills her.
Right.
They revisited that in Jason X when he picks up the two girls and smacks them into the tree.
Oh shit! Yeah, didn't even think about that.
They went to that virtual reality. Remember, it was the two girls naked
simulation. Yeah. I'll do that now.
Great. Now in part seven, the real take, Kane that seven or eight times, and he was really really tired. So they said, screw it, we're going to take one cut of him doing it. And it became legendary. And he liked it. It's still his favorite kill. Well, it's his favorite Friday the 13th kill. His favorite kill is ripping the girl's face in half in Hatchet, if you guys saw that.
Hatchet.
Yeah, go see Hatchet. There's four of them now. He was great in that.
Wow. Yeah, check that out.
Now, oh man, I had something I was going to say, and my brain took a back seat there. I know what I was going to say. Now here's the funny thing. It's pretty clear, Peter, that you're a Jason guy.
Yep.
Since the tender age of six, playing, you know, Mr. Voorhees down in the basement watching Friday the 13th.
Yep.
Here's the funny thing. I've always been a Myers guy, and SJ's always been a Krueger guy.
Oh wow.
So we have kind of a trifecta thing working here. Now, I guess for our pleasure or satisfaction or other Myers and Krueger fans out there, have you ever, you know, entertained the thought of maybe doing a fan film off of one of those two franchises? Or you do, or is this it as far as fan films with a particular franchise?
You know, I mean, like I said, I've always been a Jason guy. So to tell you the truth, I'm going to be in a Nightmare on Elm Street fan film, a small part as a bartender coming up. And for man, they're going to kill me that I forgot the name. But we haven't super announced it yet. But I can tell you guys after. I have to look it up. But it's called Nightmare on Elm Street Up All Night. And Jeremy
Up All Night. Yeah, I seen that on IMDb. Yeah.
Jeremy Brown's going to direct that also. So I got a small part where I'm just a bartender in there. So I guess I'm part of that. But, you know, the only thing that would ever entice me would to do a Freddy versus Jason the way the fans wanted it, or Freddy, Jason and Ash, or Freddy, Jason and Michael, something like that. I think I'd probably entertain, because I don't think they did it as good as they could have with Freddy versus Jason. Visually, I think they did, but story wise was kind of weak. And then Jason was the worst Jason ever of all time, if you ask me.
So you're saying Ken Kurtzinger or whatever his name is the worst Jason of all time
ever. And I don't even necessarily think it's his fault. If you look at Ron Rector, there's a YouTube link send you how New Line ruined Friday the 13th. Guy did a great job on that. And Ronnie Yu told him, act like Frankenstein, you know, and they have the makeup on where he has the fake dead eye and he's all slow moving. Fans were so used to Kane, who was violent and breathing heavy and moving crazy. And then you went to that. It didn't make any sense to me.
It didn't make sense to me either. And Ronnie Yu's whole philosophy of changing the actor for Jason also didn't make sense. He wanted somebody that was bigger, that would tower over Freddy, because, you know, Robert Englund is a shorter guy. He's like 5'4", 5'6", whatever he is. That was the only reason that he didn't cast Kane Hodder as Jason.
And if you look at everyone tried to blame everyone else once the fan backlash happened. You know, everyone's like, well, it's the producer's fault. Well, it's the director's fault. It just sucks, because all those years that everybody wanted Freddy versus Jason, the Freddy was Krueger and the Jason was Hodder. So that's what they wanted to see. So it's just kind of weird how they changed it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of the big mists leading into the era of a lot of missteps in horror, the remake genre. You know,
yeah, because Kane never would have played at all like Frankenstein like that.
No. Oh, no.
Not a joke. Yeah. And the weird thing is that, I don't know, I guess there's plot holes in every Friday 13th, so it is what it is. But Jason is reanimated flesh, so he wouldn't have a conscience, so you couldn't get into his dream state. Let's just say you could. Okay, whatever. Him being scared of water, kind of weird. But at the end, when you have the physical fight, I mean, Freddy's got no chance versus him. You got a monster buddy, and Freddy's like 160 pounds.
Right.
You know?
soaking wet.
Yeah, and he's getting his arm chopped off and machete stuck in him. Like, he'd be dead. He's a regular guy. I mean, Nancy kicked his ass.
Right. Know? Nancy kicked his ass. That's exactly right. She kicked his ass Home Alone style.
She didn't try too hard. Yeah. So I guess he got a big fight. And it was kind of cool seeing him fight like that. But a lot of stupid things, too. Freddy puts both his fingers through Jason's eye sockets. And then 2 seconds later, Jason's alive with both his eyes open.
Right. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of fuckery going on in that movie. Let's just say that. And it doesn't make any sense. It was entertaining as fuck, though, back in 2003 when it came out. I was in line to see it on opening night.
The trailer. You watch the trailer now, you get pumped up. The trailer was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. And they did throw down. I mean, they had not just one fight. It didn't come down to just one fight between Freddy and Jason. They fought like 3-4 times throughout the whole movie. So it was the definition of fan service, I think.
It would have been so much down with Kane, though. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I didn't like the Ronnie Yu over-the-top killing where the head shoots off and the blood sprays everywhere like it's Kill Bill. I didn't like that.
Right. And the gore was kind of weird. And the Freddy wink at the end was probably the lamest ending to a movie ever.
ever. That's because they wanted to give their fans, because now you do hear their fans. Oh, he wasn't dead. He winked. He won. He didn't win. They just had him wink so you could say he's still alive, you know?
Right.
Well, if you think about it.
I walked out.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I walked out of that movie like, all right, I see what you did there. But, you know.
if you think about it, Freddy movie.
Wide open.
It's a Freddy movie, right? So in a Freddy movie, what happens? Freddy dies. In a Jason movie, Jason dies. So because it was a Freddy movie, really, you had to have Freddy die.
That's interesting. That's a hot take on that. Yeah, it really is a Freddy movie, isn't it? Freddy versus
it
Jason.
Is. He's the one that revives him. He's the one that make him go back to the town to get his power back. True. He's just using him.
Yep, you're right.
You made SJ very, very happy calling that a Freddy movie.
Yes, you made me happy. I love that.
Well, Peter, as what always happens here in the Insanism, I hear the jingling of the keys of the white coats to put my one-size-fits-all jacket back on. Is there anything that you wanted to end this awesome discussion that I think we've had tonight about horror movies, about your career, about what's coming up, a lot of exciting things happening there on your front? Any final words that you have for us, sir?
No, I mean, I'd like to thank both of you guys for interviewing me. That I was honored to be on it. You guys did a great job, by the way. You seem like real fans that know what you're talking about.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Just go see Vengeance 2.0. It's much better than the original Vengeance. We finally got the sound and editing. The guy from Game of Thrones did our editing and sound. So it was a huge difference for us. And Fall of Camp Blood, you mentioned, comes out Friday the 13th in March in 2020. You can go to both sites on Facebook and Instagram, Fall of Camp Blood and Vengeance. So thanks again. If you guys need anything else from me, any help down the road or any more interviews, I'm down.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. And SJ, as always, thank you and enjoy your little yellow pill that you're going to get tonight.
Well, I thought it was going to be the pink one. Damn.
That's only on Mondays. You get the pink one on Mondays. So that's going to wrap it up. I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as SJ and myself enjoyed talking. Peter Anthony, the Mad Cuban. Does anybody even call you that anymore? Is that just a thing of the past now?
To say the truth, most of my friends still call me that. Long story short, I played football, and it was my nickname. It was given to me because I was kind of a nutball. And my mom's from Cuba and my dad's Italian. So we grew up around Italians. So like to be different would be to be Cuban, you know? So they called me the Mad Cuban. I used to fight a lot and get in trouble a lot and stuff. So it kind of does stick with friends still, but I had that name online from Instagram, but then when I'm doing Peter Anthony Productions, it's probably not the best name. So I got away from it, but you know, it's still part of me as like a mom.
That's awesome. So with that, thank you again, Peter. Thank you, SJ. And as always, we will see you on the other side.
No one knows. We're going to die.